I wanted to discuss today the topic of Mashiach ben Yosef in the year 6000. It comes up in this week's parasha, but it's always something that is on our mind, particularly given the current events and how many of us feel. I'd say it's a pervasive notion that many of us feel that we're living through, because I think you could say this in many different periods of Jewish history, but living through historic times. We feel as if Mashiach is knocking on the door, and these are things that we are thinking about in general. But just in terms of introducing the topic, I think we have more nuanced approaches to some of the most basic concepts of Jewish thought than we might generally acknowledge. For example, with regards to the principle of determinism and free choice, most of us would reject the notion of fatalism, that we're kind of just playing out a script that's already been predetermined. We believe that we have the choice to choose one way or the other, and the path is open before us. At the same time, when something doesn't go our way and we experience disappointment, we kind of shrug it off and say, well, it wasn't Basher. It wasn't meant to be, kind of falling back on that determinism kind of, or that fatalism kind of perspective. Or similarly, with regards to anthropomorphism, and then, and the notion that God has limbs and a bodily form, most of us reject that out of hand and kind of laugh at the fact that there were those who actually believed that God had a bodily form or image. At the same time, we don't even think about it, but we don't have any problem at all with the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, speech is the apex, the height of all human interaction. So obviously we have a more nuanced approach than we might imagine. It's not one way or the other. It's kind of, there's more there. And I believe that that is true as well with regards to our perspective on the coming of Mashiach. Of course, we understand and we all pine for the coming of Mashiach. We understand that that's a fundamental of our faith. A person doesn't believe in the coming of Mashiach is an apikoreis, and we long for a time when when HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the world and our mission as Jews will be obvious to all, which of course is what is represented by the coming of Mashiach. However, at the same time, we are understandably uncomfortable if one person, an individual, even if a movement will declare as their leader, is the Mashiach. That seems to rub us the wrong way, understandably, of course, given the perspective of Jewish history and how that's worked out in the past. That's something that makes us uncomfortable. While, on the other hand, we have kind of accepted and embraced the religious overtones, of the messianic overtones of the modern state of Israel. And that's something that, is part of our parlance that, we're living in messianic times. And the state of Israel is somehow a manifestation of that. So I think our relationship with, of course, we all believe in the coming of Mashiach, and we long for the time when we'll be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu freely, and the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence will be obvious. At the same time, it does seem to be some more hesitancy with regards to certain elements of Messianism, and yet we have accepted other elements. And I think it's important for us to chart a course and to kind of understand why is it that we have these kinds of different reactions to the different part of our, emuna in the coming of Mashiach. The topic is related to this week's parasha because, the issue of our believing in the coming of Mashiach and the whole notion of Mashiach is somewhat elusive in the Chumash, even though it is a principle of our faith, one of the Yigam Ikrei Amuna, kind of like Tchias HaMeisim, which is also an Ikar and Amuna, yet is only alluded to briefly, throughout the Chumash. Similarly, the coming of Mashiach is something that is not, you would think would be like Psukim, in the Chumash itself, which it's not. It's alluded to over here in this week's parasha, in the Nevuah of Bilam, where Bilam prophesies, Darach Kechav mi Yaakov, v'kam shevim mi Yisrael, there'll be a star that will come forth from Yaakov, and a scepter that will rise from Yisrael. And that's an allusion to the coming of Mashiach, which of course became a foundation of our faith, and we look forward to the time we'll be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that always was intended, where His presence will be felt and apparent. Even though we anticipate and we long for the coming of Mashiach, and it's a principle of our faith, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin that it is discouraged to calculate or predict the time of the coming of Mashiach. The Gemara comments, Tepuch Atzman Shemachash VeKitzin. Those who calculate the coming of Mashiach, their bones should rot. Why does it say kitzin in plural? That's because the Gemara later on tells us that there's really two times for the coming of Mashiach, as many of us are aware, based on the pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu, which describes the coming of Mashiach in one place as bi'ita. The other word that he uses is achishena, either in its time or quickly, with haste. which, you know, which will it be? Will it be something that will take its time, or, you know, will happen at kind of like a designated time, or is it something that could happen more quickly? So Gemara resolves Zachu Achishana, if they merit, you know, Kali says performing the Torah in the mitzvahs, it could happen, you know, quicker than perhaps anticipated. Loi Zachu, if not, it will happen Be'ita, you know, in its time. The Gemara resolves a similar contradiction between two psukim in a similar way. The pasuk says in Sefer Zechayahu describes the coming of Mashiach as Anone Shemaya, that it will be something that will happen, you know, instantaneously, like the weather can change, you know, in an instant. There's a sun shower, and then all of a sudden it's sunny again. As opposed to the pasuk in Sefer Daniel that describes the coming of Mashiach as Ka'ani HaRechiv Ala Chamar. It'll be like a person who's plodding along on a donkey that seems to be taking its time. Well, which is it? The Gemara again resolves Zachu. It will be like Anani Shemaya, if Kali says performing the Torah in the mitzvahs can happen quickly. And Moizachu will be like Ka'ani HaRechev Ala Chamor. So it sounds like that there is a, you know, there's a date when it could come early, but yet there's an end date where even if Kali says Loizachu, Mashiach, you know, will come at the Acharis Hayomim, at this end date. But either one, either the, you know, the earlier time or even the end date for the coming of Mashiach, neither one should one be involved in predicting or calculating when they will arrive. And that's what the Gemara means. You shouldn't be involved in calculating, predicting the time of the coming of Mashiach in the plural, neither time, neither that it's, you know, coming in haste or the end date of the coming of Mashiach. These are all discouraged. And in fact, the B'raisa Masechta Derech Eretz goes further and says a person who does so, ein lo chelek le'olam haba, he forfeits his share in the world to come, which is a kind of extreme punishment. You know, why, just because he did something that's objectionable, does he forfeit his share in the world to come? And the Gemara already hints to the reason, and that, you know, as to why this practice is frowned upon in the first place, and that is because if a person predicts Mashiach, let's say, is coming in 10 years, so then for the next 10 years, no one's going to believe in the coming of Mashiach. So you just, you know, you gave up on it for the following 10 years. And if you end up being wrong, no one's going to, you know, it's going to be hard to kind of bring everybody back, revive everyone in terms of the coming of Mashiach, because you're already proven wrong. So it could be, you know, dishearten people and discourage them from believing in Mashiach in the first place. So the whole process, the whole notion, the endeavor of predicting the coming of Mashiach is fraught with problems. And a person who does it, instead of strengthening people's belief in the coming of Mashiach, in fact, ironically, weakens it. And therefore, it's frowned upon. However, at the same time, the Gemara already, you know, kind of has predictions for when Mashiach will come. The Gemara said they found the Ksav Yad in Rome about when Mashiach was going to come. And there, you know, the Chazal, and certainly after Chazal and the Rishonim, is replete with predictions about the coming of Mashiach. Perhaps the most famous of which is the passage in the Zohar HaKadosh, coming in the Pasuk in Parashat Bahar, the Bishnas HaYoyvel HaZois Teshuvu Isha LaChuzasai. During the year, referring, of course, to the Shnas HaYoyvel, when all ancestral properties return to the original owner. But the Zohar HaKadosh interprets that this is referring to the coming of Mashiach in the year HaZois Teshuvu Isha LaChuzasai. We will all return to our ancestral properties in Eretz Yisrael. In the year HaZois, the year 5408, corresponding to the year 1648. Now, of course, 1648 was an infamous year in Jewish history, corresponding to the year of the Chmielnytsky pogroms in Poland, not a positive year at all, a very, you know, one of the darkest years in Jewish history, about what the Shach, you know, Kimpo, who lived at the time, composed kinois, as some used to say on Tisha B'Av, about, you know, the pogroms that took place in Poland in the year 1648. In fact, the Rebbe Reb Heschel, who lived at that time, writes in the Sefer Chanukah Satara that this is what the Pasuk means in Sefer Tehillim, that Me'es Hashem Haisa Zois, Kadosh Baruch Hu had, you know, offered us that the Gula would come in the year HaZois, V'hi Niflas V'yeinenu, but it was a pillow, a wonder in our eyes that, of course, it did not materialize. But, you know, the Zohar already predicts that the Gula will happen in the year 1648. The Rambam in his Igeres Teiman has his own year, 1216. Rashi in Sefer Daniel quotes the name of Sadigon, and the Munas Videos, who predicted the year 1336, the Ramban in the Sefer Gula, 1358, the Ari HaKadosh, my favorite one, and the Likutei Torah, that is 1976, that was the year I was born, that's, you know, that's fun for me, and the Yaakov Ruveni, which is a collection of Midrashim, says the year 2000, you know, for those who remember the panic around the Y2K. So the Yaakov Ruveni says, well, that was already, you know, perhaps the rumblings of the coming, you know, of Mashiach. And this is only a smattering, there's many, many more. Jewish history is littered, literally, with failed predictions for the coming of Mashiach. How could this be if the Gemara discourages it? The Braisa in Derech Eretz told us a person who does so loses his chelek in Olam Haba. So the Rambam in the Geres Teiman just offers one justification for the practice that, look, you know, we suffer through a dark and long galus, and we have to give people a little bit of optimism to keep them going, kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. It wasn't meant, you know, seriously. It was meant, you know, maybe as kind of like a hope, an aspiration, along the lines of Tzipisa li Yeshua. And Rabbi Zevin in the Sefer Sipurei Chasidim quotes the name of the Chayza Milublin, a similar, you know, approach. This is more of a tefillah. It was a hope, you know, a flare. We hope maybe Mashiach will come in this year, but it wasn't really meant to be a hard and fast prediction. The Ramban in the Sefer Geula, it's just a curious approach that I think is compelling somewhat, that when the Gemara discouraged the, you know, predicting and calculating the times of the coming of Mashiach, that's when Mashiach was far off in the distant future. But when Mashiach is, you know, coming, getting closer, the Geula is on the doorstep, then it's not wrong to ask, you know, well, when is it happening? And the Malbim gives a mashal to this of, you know, children who are on a car trip. Let's say you've ever flown to children's Eretz Yisrael, and when they, you know, they used to have the maps on the little screens over there, but when, you know, when you're going to get there. So a kid who asks an hour after you took off, are we there yet? You know, that's a nudnik. You know, that's not appreciated. But if you already ask, you're half an hour before you're going to land, and he says, well, when are we going to land? Well, then that's an appropriate question to ask, so he knows how to prepare himself properly. So too, the Malbim claims, yeah, far off in the distant future, when the Gemara was discussing it, yeah, then it was inappropriate. And in today's time, you know, when it's more knocking on the door, maybe it is something that's a little bit more palatable. However, the B'nai Yisachar charts a different course, which I really think sets the stage for what is our approach to our perspective on messianism and how to interpret current events in light of that. The B'nai Yisachar claims that all of these dates were not meant as the end date for when Mashiach was going to come. What these are significant points along the way. And the what the Chiddush of the B'nai Yisachar is, and we'll see it's not a Chiddush at all, which seems to be our approach all along, is that the coming of the Geula is not something that's going to happen instantaneously. It's going to be a process that will develop over time. And each one of these dates, the year 1648, right, of course, the most obvious, was a significant point in Jewish history. And when we look back after the coming of the Geula at what steps brought us to this point, that will certainly be, you know, a significant point on the timeline that brought us to the coming of the Geula. So it was never meant to be that this is the end date for when Mashiach is going to come, instantaneously. What it was meant is that this is an important step along the way as this process develops. And this is already found, really, in the Talmud Yerushalmi Masechtas Yuma, which tells us over here, I say on the sheet of Mar Mekomis, that there was once two Amoraim who were walking, and they witnessed the sunrise. And one said to the other, Kach higu losan shel Yisrael betchila kima kima. That so too, you know, just like the sun rises, it doesn't rise instantaneously. You know, 1 minute is below the horizon, the next minute the sun is above the horizon. It inches, and it's almost hard to perceive as it's happening. So too, the Geula will be a process like the sunrise that will happen, you know, and take place over time. I think the Imre Emes commented, the Imre Emes died, I think, in 1948 during the War of Independence. That's why he was not able to be buried where he was, his plot was in Har HaZeis. He wasn't able to get there. So he was buried in the chutzah in the courtyard of the Ger Beis Medrash. I think there's one of the other Ger Rebbe is buried together there with him. So, but the Imre Emes is buried there in 1948 because he couldn't get there because of the War of Independence. But he was alive when the partition plan was suggested in 1947. And they asked him, what does he say about the partition plan? And he responded with two words. He said, Kima, Kima. And what he meant was, you know, this is one step along the way. It's not the answer, you know, it's not the full answer. It's not an instantaneous relief or geula, but it's one step along the way. And all these dates that were suggested are not predictions for necessarily the instantaneous geula, but significant points along the way. And with this perspective, I would think that's how we need to interpret one of the most central texts with regards to this issue, and that's the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, here, Aizvav, I'm sure we're all familiar with it, the statement of Rav Katina, that this world will last for 6,000 years. And it's further broken down by the Tana de Beli, that's quoted there by the Gemara, that the first set of 2,000 years will be that of Tohu, of confusion. The next series of 2,000 years will be the period of the development of Torah, which actually concludes around the time of the canonization of the Talmud. And then the last 2,000 years will be the period that's defined by Yemos HaMashiach. And this is further elaborated upon by the Zohar HaKadosh, over here, Oy Zion, which is often quoted text in our times, which comes in the Pesukim Parashas Noach, Bishnas Sheish Meyos Shana L'Chayei Noach, during the 600th year of Noach's life, Nivku Kol Mayanos Tahon. Then all of the wells of water from underneath the ground opened up. And the Zohar HaKadosh understands that this refers to a burgeoning forth of knowledge that was not accessible until now. That's why many felt, Leshem Shuvah V'Achlama, as well as many others, that's why we had a kind of a renaissance with regards to Chokhmah Sanistor, Pnimiyas HaTorah, or Kabbalah, roughly around the year 1840, the 600th year of the sixth millennium, because that was what was predicted by the Zohar HaKadosh, and the wellsprings of knowledge would pour forth. I think Rav Aryeh Kaplan writes in his Sefer, the Jewish book, the Handbook of Judaism, that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always runs the physical world and the spiritual world in parallel, in tandem, and Zeh Le'uma Zeh Asa Lekim, and that's why around the year 1840 roughly corresponds with the Industrial Revolution. As the wellsprings of knowledge of Hashem became open, so too the wellsprings of knowledge of the world and of Teva and of nature became known as well. However, the Vilna Gaon writes in his Sefer, Kol HaTor, which we'll come back to in a minute, that this doesn't only refer to the wellsprings of knowledge being opened and, a renaissance of learning Pnimiyas HaTorah, Chochmas HaKabbalah. What it refers to is that's when the process of the Geula, which is focused primarily in the last 2,000 years, will begin in earnest, is in the 600th year of the sixth millennium. And that's when the Vilna Gaon began, right? The Vilna Gaon died at the end of around the 1790s, right before 1840, but he began already to send his Talmidim to Eretz Yisrael in the because of this belief that around now will begin, that's when the process of the Geula will begin in earnest, and that's when he sent, his Talmidim to kind of trigger that process or to hasten that process along. Yeah, this is a concept we're all familiar with. The year 6000, we know that's kind of like the hard and fast date for the coming of Mashiach. It's got to come by the year 6000, which, by the way, is approaching, soon, not in our lifetimes, but 2240 is not that far off. So it's coming. Yeah, but the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin discouraged us from calculating and predicting the time of the coming of Mashiach. And the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, concludes this discussion over here, Oisches, Amarav, Kalu, Kolakitim, all the predictions, all the calculations have passed. The Ein Hadavar Togli, Ela B'tshuva Maisim Tovim. They've all been exhausted. And now, in our times, everything depends, meaning the Geula depends on Tshuva and Maisim Tovim, on nothing else. How can it be then that we have come to accept that there's like this end date, like expiration date on this world at the year 6000 when Mashiach, has to come? Rav already told us, don't make predictions, don't make calculations. It's a very dangerous game to play because, first of all, you discourage people from believing until then. And then if your prediction turns out to be wrong, you discourage them from believing, afterwards, and you end up weakening Emuna. So how do we then, how have we accepted the statement of Rav Katina, the Tanna Dabeilo, that the world will kind of exist for 6,000 years and the Geula process will begin in earnest in the 600th year of the sixth millennia? I thought we don't engage in predicting and calculating the time of the coming of Mashiach. So the truth of the matter is that the Rambam in his Mor Nevuchim already writes that this was a Das Yochid. And then he says, it's probably not meant to be interpreted simply or literally. This is one of the statements of Chazal that's an agadic statement that's probably meant to be interpreted a little bit more symbolically or figuratively rather than literally. He doesn't give you the symbolic meaning of it, but the Rambam doesn't seem to believe that this is something that's being interpreted absolutely literally in its simplest form. The Ramban as well, in his comments on Parashas Bereishis, compares the 6 days of creation, which, of course, the Ramban also cautions us from interpreting literally or simply. There's so much, right? It's drenched in symbolic meaning. So too, the Ramban compares the 6 days of creation to the 6,000 years, which the world will endure for, which implies that the same lens that we have to approach the description of the Torah, the 6 days of creation, that has to be the same lens that we approach this statement of Rav Kadina and the Tanna Dabeilo, that the world will exist for 6,000 years, meaning it probably has a lot more symbolic meaning than literal and straightforward meaning. And I believe, perhaps, what the Rav Katina, what the Tanna Dabeilo are describing is, based on something the Maral, we can suggest, based on something the Maral teaches us in the Derech Hashem, the Gvuras Hashem many times, that the number 6 represents Teva. Right? There are 6 days of creation where the natural world was created. There's 6 directions that a person looks, right? There's front, back, right, left, up and down. Klal Yisrael gave birth in Mitzrayim, Shisha Bekeres Echad, you know, six at one time, not more, even though I know that there's women claim today, you know, they gave birth to more children than six at one time. And Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim only gave birth to six. That seems to be the maximum that Teva can hold, is the six directions that, you know, that that exist in this world, the 6 days of creation. The seventh, the number seven, also is in the natural world, but represents the purpose for the six directions. It's the central point which drives everything, like Shabbos, like the seventh day of the week, that drives the other and defines the reason why we work in the other 6 days of the week, because we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, created the world. And that's why the Geul, you know, perhaps, the world will exist for 6,000 years. What that means is the world will exist throughout its natural course, and the Geula will come, you know, in the seventh millennium, corresponding to the seventh day of Shabbos, right, or the Shnas HaShmita, which represents the purpose for which the 6,000 years, you know, existed in the first place. But if that's our perspective, that's why, by the way, the seventh bracha of Shmona Esrei is the bracha of the Geula, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, because the Geula will happen in the seventh millennium. But that is symbolic of the fact that the world will exist, you know, throughout, till it exhausts nature, and then, you know, the ultimate purpose will become unveiled in the seventh millennium. But perhaps what that's teaching us is that the 6,000 years will be, you know, the culmination of the Geula process, is that it will happen through natural means. That's what the number six represents. So what it means is the Geula will happen the last 2,000 years of this 6,000-year period, is that the Geula will happen, as we already explained, as a process that will develop over time. But perhaps what the number six represents, as it does in all, you know, instances where it appears, it represents Teva. It represents a natural process that will develop over time. And in fact, the Archaim HaKodesh in this week's parasha interprets the pasuk that's discussing Mashiach, it was mentioned by Bilam, "Come shavet mi Yisrael." So the Chaim HaKodesh writes that just like a scepter rises, or something rises, it rises b'derech hateva, like the sun, right? That rises b'derech hateva, which was the model for the coming of the Geula, and that rises slowly, and it's a process. So too, the coming of the Geula will happen, you know, along the lines of b'derech hateva. It'll happen something, you know, that's a natural process that will occur over time. Ka'ani HaRoichev Al HaChamor. In fact, the Ramban, in his commentary on Shir HaShirim, the Vilna Gaon has this in his comments on the Tikkuni Zohar as well, right, that the process of the, not only the Archaim HaKadosh, the process of the coming of the Geula will develop over time, and it will be, you know, a natural process. It's perhaps already alluded to in the Pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu, because we know from our discussions on Pesach that we make a point of emphasizing that the Geula happened from Mitzrayim quickly. B'chi Pazon. And we have to eat matzah that's baked quickly to remind us, ki b'chi pazon yatzos mi-Mitzrayim, that we left from Mitzrayim in haste. Why is it so important, you know, v'lo yachlu l'hismamea, that we couldn't wait around and that we had to leave in haste? Why does the matzah have to, you know, remind us that we left quickly? Why is leaving quickly so important? So Maral writes in his Sefer Netzach Yisrael that it's because time represents something, you know, that's natural. It takes time to develop. Most things that are natural take time to develop. The Geula from Mitzrayim was above time. It was above nature. It happened on a supernatural plane. The Nisim were things that the world had never seen before or after. And therefore, it's critical that we remember that it happened b'chipazon, meaning quicker than one could have imagined, not a natural process that developed over time. However, the Maral contrasts that with the way that the Geula ha'asida is described by Yeshayahu, which is kiloi b'chipazon teitzehu. You will not leave b'chipazon, meaning it will not be something that happens quickly. It'll be something that develops, perhaps slowly, you know, over time. And if that is, you know, the way that it's described, it implies that it will be a natural process, something as opposed to Yitzias Mitzrayim that was lamala min hazman, lamala min hateva. This will be b'soich hateva, b'soich hazman. None other than the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Sefer Shem Oilam, and if you read the Chafetz Chaim's writings about, you know, the time period in which he was living and how he foresaw, you know, the future, it's almost prophetic. But the Chafetz Chaim writing in the 1890s writes in the Sefer Shem Oilam that just like the Bayis Sheni was rebuilt through, you know, political and diplomatic means with assistance from the other nations of the world and giving us permission to go back and rebuild the Bayis Sheni, so too, the Chafetz Chaim wrote in the 1890s that our return to Eretz Yisrael and rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash and the coming of the Geula will be something that will take place, you know, through natural means with the assistance of the other nations of the world. And I believe that that's what the year 6,000 represents. Look, I hope the Mashiach comes tomorrow, and I hope he certainly comes before the year 2240. But I think we've kind of taken a little bit of an unhealthy approach, that we've kind of taught the whole generation, and presumably to only build up steam as time goes on, that there is no option here. Mashiach is coming by the year 2240. And I'm not sure that we're not setting ourselves up. I'm not that much of a financial planner. I'm already planning for 20. I don't have a solution to the national debt either. I don't know what's going to be in the year 2240, but I'm a little bit concerned about our attitude towards that. And I think what it really means is that it will happen through natural means, and that will process that will unfold over time. And I believe that this also should be reflected in our perspective of who will precipitate this process, meaning in who is identified as the Mashiach. We're generally accustomed to the Mashiach ben David. That's how we think about Mashiach, as that one individual who's so charismatic and so influential that he's able to precipitate the coming of Mashiach. And it's certainly the way the Rambam describes Mashiach ben David over here, Oisir Gimel, and Hilchos Malachim, where the Rambam tells us he has to be Hoyge B'Torah V'Oisik B'Mitzvahs, he has to learn Torah, do mitzvahs, he has to encourage others to do the same, V'Yikuv Kol Yisrael Leilech, but he has to fight the Mochemes Hashem, V'Yilchom Mochemes Hashem, and a person who does all of these, satisfies these requirements, is Bechezka Shehu Mashiach. He has the presumed status as, kind of the interim Mashiach. If he continues down that path, and he ultimately is able to vanquish our enemies, to build the Beis HaMikdash, to be Mekabetz Nidchei Yisrael, then he has proved that he is, the legitimate, not just the assumed Mashiach, presumed Mashiach, but the legitimate Mashiach. If he has not succeeded, or he dies along the way, so then, then his candidacy, has failed as well. And not everyone who's Bechezkas Mashiach, who might legitimately be Bechezkas Mashiach, pans out to ultimately be the Mashiach. And none other than Rebbe Kiva himself, kind of seems to have endorsed a candidate who was Bechezkas Mashiach, yet in the end failed to materialize. As the Rambam describes over there, Halacha Gimel, the preceding Halacha, the Rebbe Kiva thought there was an individual right in the second century Common Era named Bar Kochva. They called him Bar Kochva because they thought he was Darach Koch of Miyakov, become Shevim Yisrael. He was the fulfillment of that star that was rising from Yaakov, that he would become the Mashiach. But Achenerag Bavoinois, once he was killed with, as a result of his sins, came in Chenerag, Noidalahem Sha'eno. Once he was killed and he didn't continue to live, it's pretty obvious that he was no longer the Mashiach. There's actually a fascinating book called The Mystery of Bar Kochva, written by Leibo Resnick, who examined the Dome of the Rock is built on a raised platform, which has an unusual shape. It's kind of like a trapezoid. So the Leibo Resnick traces the dimensions of the platform on which the, and it's a little bit unclear actually who built that platform. It seems to have predated the Ottomans. So the Leibo Resnick claims that in fact it corresponds to the dimensions of the Bayis Shlishi as described by Chezkel Navi. And he suggests that maybe it was even built by Bar Kokhba in anticipation of building, the Bayis Shlishi. That's how far his candidacy got to be the Mashiach, is that he was already, laying the foundation for the Bayis Shlishi. But of course, in the end, his candidacy failed because he was put to death. He didn't continue to live. It was assumed to be axiomatic by the Rishonim that a person cannot come back from the dead to become the Mashiach ben David. The Ramban has, lays that as one of his foundational principles in his debates with Papa Christiani as to why, one of the reasons that we reject Christianity, of course, we believe that a Messiah cannot come back from the dead. But we're used to this kinds of, these kinds of descriptions of Mashiach as this individual whose achievements, satisfy this list of requirements and therefore has proven himself to be that a special individual who's going to precipitate the coming of Mashiach. However, in the Talmud Yushalmi, we seem to get, a more expanded view. Look over here, Ois Tezvav, the Baal Shem Tov, quotes from the Talmud Yushalmi. I could have given you Yushalmi. It's a Maaseh Sheni. I'm sorry I didn't give it to you directly. But the Yushalmi quotes that very same pasuk in this week's parasha that we mentioned already with the Medrash comments. Darach Koch from Yaakov become Shevim Yisrael. A star will rise from Yaakov, a scepter from Yisrael. That refers to the coming of Mashiach. The Yushalmi says it refers to every member of Klal Yisrael. Over here on the second line, V'yil v'Yushalmi Midrash ha-pasuk ha-kol echem Yisrael. And the Baal Shem Tov claims, it's quoted by the Morei Naim, one of his Talmidim, Ach ein stira bein hashnayim. There's no contradiction here. It's really both. Because every member, ki b'chol ish Yisrael, sheichen chelek min nishmasel shal Mashiach. Every member of Klal Yisrael has a part to play in the coming, of Mashiach. What does that mean? What does it mean everyone has a role to play in the coming of Mashiach? I thought it was one special individual. kind of like, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu redeemed us from Mitzrayim, so too we'll have a Mashiach ben David who will redeem us, you know, from this Golos that we're in and, you know, precipitate the coming of the Gula Asida. What does it mean every Jew plays a role here? And the Vilna Gaon builds upon this Yerushalmi in explaining that perhaps what it means is that everyone is included in a different concept, not Mashiach ben David, but the other Mashiach, who's only described cryptically in a few places by Chazal in the Gemara Masechtas Sukkah, known as Mashiach ben Yosef. The Gemara tells us that prior to the coming of Mashiach ben David, there will be a Mashiach ben Yosef, another Mashiach, this descended not from the children of Leah, but from the children of Rachel ben Yosef, who will wage Mechemez Gog u'Magog. He'll be killed towards the end of Mechemez Gog u'Magog, and that will pave the way for the coming of Mashiach ben David. In fact, the Vilna Gaon reads it into this pasuk in this week's parasha. Darach, over here in the Edrus Elio, on this week's parasha, Darach Koichav mi Yaakov, that a star will come forth from Yaakov, Zem Mashiach ben Yosef. Because who is the one who's dreaming of stars and moons and celestial beings bowing down to him? That's Yosef. So Darach Koichav mi Yaakov, a star will come forth from Yaakov, that refers to Mashiach ben Yosef. It comes Shevet mi Yisrael, who's the one who holds the scepter of leadership? But Yasser Shevet mi Yehuda? That's Mashiach ben David. The Shavit v'hu Mashiach ben David. So the Vilna Gaon already reads into the pasuk in this week's parasha the allusion to these two Mashiachs. There's the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David. Who is this Mashiach ben Yosef? The Rambam never describes him or gives the qualifications, you know, of what one needs to be, you know, what one needs to do in order to claim or to lay claim to be Mashiach ben Yosef. Who is this Mashiach ben Yosef? It's really not explained until the Vilna Gaon. The Ramchal has a lot about it in his writings as well. But the Vilna Gaon, this is really the central thesis of his Sefer Kohatar. The Sefer Kohatar is what's described by many as the Bible of religious Zionism, but it really has what is one of the fulcrums, one of the bedrock principles of the messianic component of religious Zionism. And it is because the Vilna Gaon here explains or delineates what is or who is considered to be Mashiach ben Yosef. But before we get there, the Vilna Gaon, you have to know, the Sefer Kohatar is a little bit controversial. Why? Because it's how it emerged is somewhat mysterious. It's not written by the Vilna Gaon. What didn't come out during the time, the lifetime of the Vilna Gaon himself, or even in the immediate aftermath of his passing. Rather, it was published by the Rivlin family in the beginning in the 1940s. The Rivlin, you know, family traces itself back to the earliest Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, where Binyamin of Shklov was the first Rivlin. He was one of the illustrious Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon. His son was Hillel Rivlin, who made Aliyah with the earliest Talmidei Hagra at the end of the 1700s, the beginning of the 1800s. Of course, that started the entire Rivlin family, which is, you know, known by Arba Kanfei Saaretz. Throughout Eretz Yisrael, it's an enormous family. One of the descendants was Ruvi Rivlin, who was the immediate past president of the State of Israel. But one of those descendants was Shlomo Zalman Rivlin, who in the 1940s claimed that there were teachings from the Vilna Gaon passed down in his family, secret teachings of the Vilna Gaon, about the coming of Mashiach, about the Geula, about many different things. And in the 1940s, he began to publish them. And he claimed that these were teachings going back from the Vilna Gaon that were passed down, traditions passed down in his family. He published them in a series of pamphlets where he planned to publish seven. He only ended up publishing five, and they came out around the year 1947, 1948. It ran out because they didn't have any more money, so they stopped publishing them. And they weren't, you know, it didn't make a big hit. It wasn't that popular, and they almost disappeared. In 1967, of course, there was a resurgence of interest in the topic in general, for obvious reasons. So in 1968, Rav Menachem Kasher published his Sefer HaTkufa Gedola, where he included the first five chapters, the first five pamphlets of this Kol HaTor. Kol HaTor, of course, is an allusion to the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Kol HaTor Nishma B'Yartzeinu, that the call of the turtle dove is heard in our land or throughout the land, you know, representing the beginning of spring when the birds begin to chirp. Of course, describing the comings, the beginnings of the comings of the Geula. So Rav Kasher published it in 1968 in his book, HaTkufa Gedola. At the same time, Rav Chaim Friedlander, who was the Mashgiach and the Panovich Yeshiva, the author of the Sifsei Chaim, published it as well. To find an original copy of those pamphlets published in 1947, 1948 is very rare. I don't know of any that exist, but they used two copies that they were able to find to publish their separate copies in 1967, 1968. Because though, and there's many interesting things here, because though, you know, it's, you know, we don't, you know, it was published much after the time of the Vilna Gaon. Already, of course, there's going to be, you know, it'll be somewhat controversial. It's a little bit more controversial because there are those who said, you know, there were so many interesting things here. Let's go back and look at what is the what it states in the manuscript in the Ksav Yad. But the Ksav Yad seems to have disappeared. You know, where it actually came from. You know, where were these written teachings passed down? You know, over 200 years in the Rivlin family, the teachings from the Vilna Gaon, you know, seems to have disappeared. What were there actually ever Kisvei Yad? Or did Shlomo Zalman Rivlin, you know, write this on his own? So it's fascinating, the history of how it developed. But Shlomo Zalman Rivlin had a shamish whose name was, at the time, now we all know him as Dr. Elazar Hurwitz, who's a professor in Yeshiva University, was the shamish of Shlomo Zalman Rivlin in the 1940s as he was putting out this Sefer Kol HaTorah and these different pamphlets and different volumes. And he was the one who was tasked with, you know, writing it down and, you know, giving it to the publisher. But he was, of course, a young person at the time. And there has been a lot of controversy and debate, you know, were the Kisvei Yad, were they not Kisvei Yad? They've asked Dr. Hurwitz, the Rivlin, Shlomo Zalman Rivlin, of course, is no longer alive. Dr. Hurwitz should live and be well. But there's been controversy, were there ever Kisvei Yad, were there no Kisvei Yad? It's been something that's, Dr. Hurwitz doesn't talk about it anymore for understandable reasons. But, you know, it's a topic that has much mystery and much controversy surrounding it. How much of this is actually attributable to the Vilna Gaon, given the fact that we don't have any Kisvei Yad in terms of where this came from. But with that Hakdama, and with that, you know, a little bit of a grain of salt, it says in the Sefer Kol HaTorah, the Sefer Kol HaTorah seems to be that there were things that were added after, and that's undeniable, but there are certainly themes that are echoed throughout all of the writings of the Vilna Gaon. So it certainly seems to be attributed to the Vilna Gaon, if not every word from the Vilna Gaon. And over here in the Sefer Kol HaTorah, though, there is one, you know, kind of revolutionary idea, and that is that Mashiach ben Yosef is not one individual. It's a conglomerate of individuals. It's a combination of different points in time and the different contributions of many influential Jews over that period that contributed to the coming of the Geula. And therefore, the Vilna Gaon traces it, you know, different Gedolim, Rishayim. He goes even back to the Ovis. He even includes himself, which is, you know, would be unusual if it would be the Vilna Gaon writing him, you know, himself. But he includes himself as one critical point along the way in the development of the coming of the Mashiach. And that is all included with under the larger heading of Mashiach ben Yosef. And that's why we don't find requirements or, you know, to claim to be Mashiach ben Yosef, because it is by committee. It's something that we all play a role in, some more than others, and bring about the coming of the Geula through this natural process that will develop, you know, represented by the 6,000 years as we've discussed. The Vilna Gaon reads this into a contradiction in the Rambam. The Gemara Masechtas Brachos presents it as kind of two different perspectives on what the Yemos HaMashiach will look like. And we don't have time to delve into, you know, do this justice, but the Gemara Masechtas Brachos outlines two possible perspectives. What is going to happen in the times of the coming of Mashiach? One perspective is, Kol Nevi'im Kulam HaNisnabu El Yemos HaMashiach, that you know, all of the fantastic predictions that or rewards that are outlined by the Chumash will happen in the Yemos HaMashiach, which will be a time that seems to be Lamala Minateva. Then Shmuel rejects that. Amar Shmuel, Ein Bein Olam Hazel Yemos HaMashiach Kol Shibud Malchus Bovad. No, there'll be no difference between the world that we know today and the world that will exist in Yemos HaMashiach, except for the fact that we will be free to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. We won't have Shibud Malchus, you know, bearing down upon us, but it will be the same natural world that we know of today. And the Rambam, as is well known, writes in Perek Tes Halacha Beis, paskins like Shmuel. The Ramban, in you know, Parshat Duchukaisa and elsewhere, paskins, you know, like Rabbi Yochanan, know that Yemos HaMashiach will be something that's entirely experienced lamala min ha-teva. The Rambam believes it'll be an experience that is b'soich ha-teva. Says the Rambam over here, Aishkaf, ein bein olam hazel Yemos HaMashiach, el shibud malchus bovad. However, the problem is, the Rambam, one Perek earlier in Hilchos Tshuva, paskins like the other opinion, that of Rabbi Yochanan, that Kol HaNeviim Kulam Lo Nisnabu Yemos HaMashiach, all the predictions of the Neviim throughout Chumash will come true in the times of Yemos HaMashiach. So it will be Lamala Min HaTeva, not the same world that we know today, a different reality. Well, which is it? Is it a different reality, or is it the reality that we know of today? And the Vilna Gaon, quoted over here in the Sefer Imrei Noam and the Sefer Brachos, suggests Elu V'Elu, that in fact both are true, and that's why the Rambam quotes both. They're referring to different periods of time. The period of Mashiach ben Yosef, which will precede the period of Mashiach ben David, will be the same world that we know of today, except we'll begin to attain a certain measure of freedom, religious freedom, to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we'll no longer have Shibud Malchus, a little bit of independence. And that is, you know, will happen b'sei chateva, in the same world of, you know, that we know of today. What is referred to as, you know, when, what is the Rambam describing when he says, kol nevim kulam gonis nabu imosa Mashiach, that the period of imosa Mashiach will be something that's l'magam in Ateva. There he's describing the time period of Mashiach ben David, which will, you know, come after Mashiach ben Yosef. That will be a period that's entirely l'malam in Ateva, something, you know, that's above this world. But the period of Mashiach ben Yosef, which will, you know, lay the groundwork for that, is a natural process that will happen in the same reality that we're used to today. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Sefer Shem Olam and elsewhere that it's important for us to recognize that sometimes what's happening in front of our eyes through the natural unfolding of current events is the, you know, the footsteps of the coming of Mashiach. We're living in what's known as, you know, the period of the Ikvasa, the Mashiach. Now, that doesn't mean that supernatural things are happening. It means that world events are trending, you know, in that direction. Of course, the Chafetz Chaim notes, and already he was living in the 1890s, right, that the greatest siman of the coming of the Gula, as mentioned, the Gemara Masechta Ketubos, Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, is that the land of Eretz Yisrael will begin to blossom after being dormant for many years. The Ramban already writes in Parshas B'chukos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept Eretz Yisrael dormant, you know, for when we were in exile on purpose, in order so that it should not have been colonized by the other nations, and we should be able to come back and reclaim it, you know, for ourselves. And the fact that Eretz Yisrael is reproducing in our times is something that's, of course, a siman of the Geula. The Gemara also says Kibbutz Galus will be, you know, follow the rebirth or the, you know, the reignition of the productivity of Eretz Yisrael. That's why we have in the Shemona Esrei right after the bracha of Barech Aleinu that Eretz Yisrael will continue to, you know, once again produce fruits. We have the bracha of Kibbutz Galus. Because the Kibbutz Galus, another siman of the Gula, will follow right after Eretz Yisrael, you know, begins to reemerge as a productive nation. And therefore, it's not surprising that Chafetz Chaim already saw in his time that some of these simanim coming true. Certainly in our times, you know, we can say the same. Right after the State of Israel declared its independence in 1948, there was a letter that was published and signed by many Gedolim. It was dated 1949. Many of the Gedolim you would recognize, you'd be surprised, you know, that they signed such a letter. There are some notable exceptions who did not sign that letter. But it's published in Rav Kasha Sefer HaTkuva Gedola, where they described what they were witnessing in front of them as Nitzanim HaRishayinim Daschalta the Geula, the first buddings of the coming of the Geula, which was later adapted by Shai Agnon in the Mishaber for the Medina's Reishis Tzmichas Gula Seinu. He was paraphrasing what those Gedolim had used, the phrase of Nitzanim HaRishonim Daschalta DeGeula. And that's what the Chafetz Chaim cautions us, or, you know, teaches us, is that we have to view current events in this light of understanding that the Geula is going to unfold through natural means, through current events, and will be a process that we shouldn't expect is going to happen immediately. We might take one step forward and two steps back, like any process that's natural. And that is how, you know, the coming of Mashiach will develop, and it, you know, will be a natural process represented by the year 6000. That seems to be our perspective. It's also important, though, to keep in mind, you know, to balance this, you know, exuberance, this excitement, with the fact that, you know, that the Vilna Gaon notes, the Yeshayahu HaNavi describes the coming of the Geula as Chala V'gam Yolda Tzion, as a birth, as something that also, like a natural occurrence, something that, you know, is a process that occurs over time, period of 9 months, but a birth that also becomes a little bit more difficult as it nears the end. That's why, just like in Mitzrayim, as they were about to leave, the pasuk says, "Tichbara avoda," Paro made the, you know, the labor that much more burdensome, that much more onerous. So too, as the Geula is coming to, you know, is coming to fruition, will become that much more difficult. That's where Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has a famous kuntres called "Ikvus of the Mashiach," where Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, one of the talmidim of the Chafetz Chaim, of course. So he, you know, picks up the baton from the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim, you know, gave us excitement and optimism and exuberance. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, you know, presents the other side of the coin, which is as the Geula comes closer, of course, we're going to have more and more difficulties that might be, you know, thrown in our way. Ikvus of the Mashiach is a painful time, and there are a lot of things that might happen, you know, that are the Chevlei Leida, that are the birth pangs, you know, of the coming of the Mashiach, which might be painful and might be viewed as a step back, but are really just part of this natural process that's developing before us. I think just to conclude, as we approach the period of the 3 weeks, you know, to just go back to something we discussed Pesach before, to the Leil HaSeder, of course, we know already says in the Shulchan Aruch HaSimen of Atbash that the night of the Seder is always the same night of the week as Tisha B'Av. That's one of the reasons the Ramah suggests we have an egg at the Leil HaSeder to remind us that this same day of the week, in a few months, will be Tisha B'Av. But what's the connection between, you know, Pesach and Tisha B'Av, and why are we alluding to that, that the Leil HaSeder seems to be out of place. So the Vilna Gaon explains in his comments on the Tikkuni Zohar that it's because the coming of the Geula will be like a birth, right? As the Pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu describes it, Chalav Agam Yol Tzion. That's why it becomes more difficult as you get towards the end. So Vilna Gaon quotes in the Tikkuni Zohar that most miscarriages, Le'aleinu, happen in the fifth or sixth month. So Vilna Gaon claims Tisha B'Av happens in the fifth month after Pesach, which represents, you know, Pesach, the year is pregnant with possibility for the coming of the Geula, and that's what we're thinking about at the Leil HaSeder. What Tisha B'Av means is, if we're still mourning the loss of the Beis HaMikdash 5 months later, is that this year was, you know, lahavdil, le'aleinu, a miscarriage. What it means is that, you know, the Geula didn't, you know, seem to materialize and give birth as we had initially imagined. I think that's why, perhaps, in the last kina that we say right on Tisha B'Av, we cry out, ki isha b'tzireha, like a woman who's in the pangs of labor. Why do we evoke that kind of imagery? Perhaps, you know, we can understand in light of the comment of Vilna Gaon that it's because the pregnant possibility of the year has now, you know, has not come to fruition, has not materialized in the way that we had hoped. And perhaps that's why, you know, as well, on Yom HaKippurim, if you remember, we conclude the Avayu with a strange Yehi Ratzon. And we concluded with a year, you know, we hope there should be a year, a bracha of Gzeros Tovus, of Dagan V'Tirosh, of Harvacha, Hatzlacha. We go through the whole Aleph Beis of Brachis. And these are all national aspirations, right? We hope it's a year of Seiva, of Oineg, of Masu Matan, Novel LeBeis Mikdashenu. These are things we hope on a national level. But then there's one personal, seems to be a personal request at the end, Shana Shlosapil Isha's Pribitna, a year that no woman should have a miscarriage. And of course, we can, you know, overstate the pain of a miscarriage. But why is that the only personal request that we find mixed into this list of national aspirations? And perhaps what we're talking about here is not, you know, the individual who has a miscarriage. What we're referring to here is that the year should, you know, materialize in the way that we had hoped, that the year should, you know, the pregnant possibilities of the year of the coming of Mashiach should materialize, and that we should be zeicha to the geula. B'mheir v'yameinu, amen.